Hello everybody and welcome to the Trauma and Mind Body Super Conference, and I'm very excited to invite Dr. Christine Schaffner, who is a super duper guest. She has tons of clinical experience. She's the director of the Sophia Institute, which is a clinic actually that she co-founded with Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, who's also on the summit. And Dr. Schaffner, welcome to the summit. It's an honor and a privilege to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Nikki, for having me.
Now, Dr. Schaffner, you have seen many, many sort of thousands of patients. You're a very experienced clinician, and you work a lot with trauma in a clinical setting. And I'd love for you to expand a bit more about how you assess trauma, how you see it impacting the multiple kind of ways that trauma impacts your clients and patients. We'll sort of talk about what you do to remediate that, but perhaps share, first of all, how trauma, what you see the impacts are of trauma on the clients that you see in the patients.
Yeah, absolutely, Nikki. And so, you know, by the time someone comes to see us, we see patients who have chronic illness. And so it's a very multifaceted illness when we're breaking it down. So we look at all of the physical elements. We look at, you know, toxicity and infections and the immune system. And, you know, a big piece of our work is looking at someone's trauma history. And to really oversimplify, we see such complex patients, right? But to oversimplify, I feel my job is in a lot of ways to identify roadblocks for the body to self-regulate and heal. And I feel like trauma is one roadblock and injury to many different layers of our body that we can walk through today. So I think you probably have other guests talking about how trauma can, and when we're talking about trauma, right, there's physical traumas, and then of course there's emotional traumas. And when we think about emotional trauma, I think about past life experiences that can make individuals vulnerable and set them up to be more vulnerable to a chronic illness. There's also the trauma of being sick. I mean, it's a very hard time for an individual when they go through an illness. And then we also think about, which we'll talk about, this epigenetic phenomenon and ancestral trauma and how that can show up in our lives on not only an energetic and spiritual level, but also on a physical level. So I'm happy to, you know, talk about all of this. But so again, when we think about my job is to allow and identify roadblocks for a patient's body to self-regulate and heal, we look at trauma as one insult to many systems. So I want to go through the autonomic nervous system. I also want to talk about the connective tissue and fascia and how trauma can be stored in those tissues. Also, I love talking about the energetics and really how trauma can be stored in what we call the biofield, and then circle back on epigenetics. And so when we think about the nervous system, trauma, you know, many people have heard of, you know, fight or flight, rest and digest, and also this freeze mode, right? And so when we go through a traumatic event, many things can happen, but it can be an injury to our autonomic nervous system. And I love the work of Peter Levine. I don't know if you have, you know, him on those or anyone referring to his work, but he did a lot of what we call somatic body work, and he looks at the somatic theory of trauma. So this idea that essentially, some people freeze in response to trauma. And when we think about how we were evolutionary evolved, a freeze mode could be in, you know, we're in front of the bear and we could pretend we're dead and, you know, freeze in the moment. And then what the animals do in nature is that they have a moment of, after they've, you know, convinced the bear to move on, that they're dead, to move away, that they have a moment of complete kind of shaking that energy out of their body, you know, so they kind of restore this kind of regulation their nervous system again. But what happens is that people can get caught in that freeze mode and never ever have the opportunity to release that that energy and get stuck in this frozen state. And so somatic work looks at the nervous system and, you know, how can we really help, you know, not using words, but how do we allow the body to release that trauma and release those stored, you know, physical events that created kind of a frozen state in the nervous system. And, you know, how this shows up, of course, when a patient has chronic health issues, their nervous system is really having a hard time regulating, right? They're either stuck in fight or flight, they can't get in a parasympathetic state to heal and repair, or they could be also in this, you know, frozen mode. So I want to acknowledge the autonomic nervous system, and I'm sure, you know, you have other people going in more depth. You know, there's of course the polyvagal theory to discuss and kind of all of these, you know, wonderful ways to kind of integrate how trauma affects the nervous system. But Before I move on to kind of how it gets blocked in the fascia, is there anything, Nikki, that you want to add or that I missed that you want me to illustrate on on that point?
No, that's beautiful. I think it's really good, the juxtaposition, the contrast you're about to unfold, because we've mentioned summarizing fight flight response, where people the impact of trauma on the nervous system is that regulation isn't happening properly, and we need a nervous system regulated to heal. When we're not in a healing state, nothing else you're doing works. Even the energetic work won't work as well. Even the biochemical work you do won't work as well, right? If you don't make sure you address the nervous system level, that has to be addressed.
Absolutely, absolutely, Nikki. And then, many patients who have a physical experience, I don't know if you're listening out there, but maybe you found, we can talk about these therapies that we use a lot in our practice, but there's someone who's maybe gifted in body work and you've had either like craniosacral therapy or we do trigger therapy or any type of fascial unwinding, and you could be laying on the table and you could be just relaxed, and then all of a sudden you might have an emotion or a thought or a feeling or a release on some level of a kind of the cellular discharge of emotional energy. And that sometimes can be tears or even vocalizations or just the body unwinding. And so what we're trying to kind of make sense of that from a clinical experience, that makes perfect sense and I totally understand that, but what we're seeing and what people are trying to put together is that actually the trauma that someone goes through can actually be stored in this connective tissue and fascial network. And this is an area I love to just study because of its intricacies. And it's a big part of our work of how do we restore communication in the matrix and clean up the matrix so the cells can function better. And a big part of our connective tissue and extracellular matrix is our collagen, right? And so collagen is this very abundant protein in the body. And the way that collagen organizes itself, it organizes itself in the matrix with actually structured water. And they found that not only is it have a structural component, but it actually conducts electricity in the body. So to very oversimplify, collagen is a semiconductor and can be a way, kind of a fiber optic system in the body. And the biophysicist Mei Wan Ho, who has written wonderful books, I'm diving into her work more and more as I go down these rabbit holes, but she actually really felt like she had a concept of the acupuncture system based on this collagen fiber optic network. And what she also talks about, this is the way that this protein and this water is organized in the matrix. It actually has the ability to store information. And she talks about this is where body consciousness is held, and this is where trauma can be held. And so when we think about my experience of how this shows up in people's lives is, again, they can have a traumatic experience. They can consciously think that they are healed from that, or they don't have a memory of it, or they don't think it's kind of impacting their life, but their body remembers and their body is still holding in that pattern. And that that pattern is actually interrupting the communication network in the body, and also it's an unresolved issue, right? So the ways that we have found to be helpful is not only body work, but the thing that I can talk about a little bit more too is the physical manifestation I see a lot is scar therapy, and how when we treat scars and help not only heal the scar tissue, but there's a huge opportunity for emotional release, in those moments. And happy to talk about that more now or a little bit later. But I just want people to have more of a language. And again, this is just an area that I'm always, getting excited about, looking about all the ways, our body holds information, and this collagen network, this connective tissue, this fascia system is really, I think, still under appreciated and under, not as acknowledged, especially when we're talking about chronic disease and, how to recover someone's health.
That's lovely, because it's also you're making the connection to water, which I don't think we've got anyone talking about the memory of water and the fact that we have got Gerald Pollack talking about, like, there is scientific evidence to show that water carries memory, okay, for any of the skeptics out there. But that's beautiful, because I've totally, what I've found it with my clients is when I do a lot of work to get emotions out and to release unresolved emotions, one of the most important things to do to deal with the emotional detox is water cleansing, sweating, lemon baths, things, sort of the high, I think it's high hydrogen water, or I've got something I use called way back water to keep the body flushed out. So that's a very interesting point, a really important point that you've actually made. I hardly anyone said on the summit, so just to reinforce that, that's it's a really important level. So like flushing through water, and also there'll be other ways that we can talk about that deals with that level as well. Lovely. So that's another level to consider. It's amazing that we are multi-leveled beings. We have more than one body to consider for health, right? And each of them gets imprinted with trauma and should therefore kind of be supported. And then when we get, we'll sort of hit a tipping point and then it will all clear through. So lovely. Great.
Absolutely. I love that you have Dr. Pollack on. And yeah, his work has been, he's a friend of ours, and his work has been so impactful. And I, you know, just take us on an aside. I feel like on some level, you know, our health is directly related about as how much exclusion zone water we have inside our cells and in our matrix. And it's a very fundamental part of, you know, our health. And I'm glad, you know, he's talking about that. So,
Yes, so hydration is really important for emotional detox. People don't think about that, do they? Hydration and emotional detox. Anyway, yeah, carry on.
Yeah. So then just kind of, you know, going into my thoughts a little bit of, again, how trauma affects us. Trauma also affects what we call our biofield. And so we did the Body Electric Summit last year, and that was so much fun for me. And it's just, again, you know, giving people more ideas and concepts and of a language that, again, we're more than our physical body, right? And we have something that is called the biofield. And Dr. Rubik, and outside of San Francisco, she's in Berkeley, she's a biophysicist and studies the biofield, and she really, you know, coined that term and put that into research. And so the biofield is this basically electromagnetic field that surrounds our body. And there are a lot of people who work with trauma that feel that trauma is actually stored in our biofield, and actually that trauma affects our biofield and it affects our communication system in our physical body. So how this looks, as well as Eileen McCusick, I love her work as well. She has something called biofield tuning.
She's on the
So she
summit.
finds, yeah, great. So
Thanks to
please
you.
listen.
Thanks to
Yeah. Oh, great. Just please listen to her, you know, work, and she'll do a way better job. But just to introduce this concept, because I think she gives the best visualization of how this all works. And so, her work has been able to map out the biofield, and she sees patterns. So if people have different traumas in their life, there's actually a pattern in where it shows up in our field. But she uses sound therapy. So she uses actually tuning forks to find where there is dissonance or incoherence in the biofield. And then she uses sound to help, you know, create coherence in the field. So again, to using a tuning fork to kind of shift that energy and create more flow, if, you know, just to oversimplify it. So again, her work and kind of the work of a lot of other energy medicine experts is that we have this field of energy and information around our body, and this is where the trauma, the memories of trauma, can be stored, and that can be creating blockages in communication and flow that can affect our physical body. So I think the biofield has to be addressed, and I know that your work, you know, that you do with Ness, and you know, all of the wonderful remedies you use, really works in kind of correcting and creating more order and you know, efficiency and ease in the biofield, so the body can actually have the blueprint to heal and repair.
Yes. Well, actually, I did, after you, I was speaking with you after the Body Electric Summit, I actually went and trained with Eileen McCusick, and so I
Oh,
love biofield tuning. Yes,
great.
I find it's one
Oh,
of the most powerful ways to like use resonance to just oscillate out and kind of raise the frequency of the whole biofield and clear out the blockages. And it's probably the most powerful that I've come across. And I think it gets to things like attachment trauma, and so it's super powerful.
yeah, awesome that you did that. I have my sonic slider on my desk somewhere. I'm always, you
Yes,
know, forth. You know, so I know you should see what's on my desk here. It'd be pretty funny.
So Eileen McCusick actually demonstrates the sonic slider. So if anybody wonders what Dr. Schaff is talking about, it's it. Go and watch the Eileen McCusick. But anyway, lovely. Carry on.
Awesome. So then, kind of lastly, kind of in the buckets that I feel like, you know, I can share with about how trauma affects us is this whole idea of epigenetics, right? So epigenetics is, we have our, inherited genes, but we have all of these epigenetic factors or environmental factors that can tell our genes to be expressed or turned off. And so what we've looked at, especially with trauma, is that trauma affects our epigenetics. So just like having mercury in your body, a traumatic event can affect your DNA methylation machinery. And so that is the way that things can, genes can get regulated on or off. And then also we can inherit those traumatized genes, if you will, ancestrally. So if our parents or grandparents even had a traumatic event in their life and that affected them, their epigenetic expression of certain genes, we can inherit those expressions, and that can show up in our present life. And so there was a study, I was just kind of looking at the research before, preparing for this talk, and a woman looked at mice that were traumatized. So they were taken away from their mother early in life. And then they found that they had an overexpression of, basically, to keep it simple, cortisol receptors in their brain or their hippocampus. And so that traumatic event told their genes to basically upregulate cortisol. So they were in this hypervigilant and fearful state, right? What they also showed is that, that was also the fathers of the mice who had that same experience also passed on those genes as well. So it's kind of like a double whammy. So the father was traumatized, shared those with the, soon to be traumatized offspring, and then they were traumatized, and so it affected their epigenetic expression of cortisol receptors in the brain. But the interesting thing is, and the powering thing is, that this can be healed, right? So these epigenetic mechanisms also, even if they shift this way, they can also shift in a more balanced state. And so they found in their research that, putting the mice in a very stress-free environment and kind of, again, they're mice, right? So stress-free environment helped to, start the DNA methylation to downregulate those basically cortisol receptors in the brain. So it's on one level, like, really, oh my gosh, we're so interconnected, not only to our parents, but our lineage. And, this is how trauma can be passed down. It can be like, oh my gosh, overwhelming, but it can be also very empowering, right? Because we also can, with mitigating stress and then some of the wonderful modalities we'll talk about, we can help flip the switch and create a healthier expression of those genes. So I think that the epigenetic research is, still in its infancy to look at trauma and genetic expression. But I think it's one of the most fascinating to look at as well.
Totally agree. And it was just sort of your point about with the rodent experiment. I don't know if it's the same one, but they actually took the offspring and put the traumatized offspring, the sperm that went to the offspring that had been traumatized, with a healthy female, and they were brought up by the healthy female, but ruled out bad parenting. It was just passed on purely epigenetically, because people say, well, how do you know it wasn't just traumatized parents do trauma to their kids through behavior, right? So they put the traumatized sperm with good parenting anyway, and showed that it was pure epigenetic. I think it's a different experiment, but
right? The poor mice, what they go through for our learning,
I know, I agree. But yes, so that was lovely. All the levels, fantastic. Please share what's your top sort of things that you would share, for the beauty being that we can reverse the impact of trauma from all these levels, right?
Yeah, so when someone comes to see me, I'm kind of, holding all these thoughts in my head around how trauma might be affecting them. And again, everyone is so individual, but kind of the work that I do day in and day out is when we see patients, we do ART. Dr. Klinghardt's on the summit, so he'll talk to you about ART probably more, and all the facets of that. But we're looking at, again, through ART, it's just a biofeedback exam where we're looking where there are blockages for the body to self-regulate and heal and how to correct them. And so kind of tying this in, we can actually find that scars can be what we call interference fields, and scars are from surgeries or mole removals or injuries. Many people don't really think about their scars, right? And then when we see a patient, especially a new patient, I'm always like, we're having a scar tune-up. So most of their scars come up on their, first visit. And what we can see is that scars actually can affect the fascia, the connective tissue, and then they can hold emotional trauma, right? Kind of from my description of collagen and, you know, the interfacial water and, you know, how memory can be held, you know, in that space in the body. And so the best example that I often see is I see a lot of female patients and, you know, a lot of women have C-section scars. And so when we think about a C-section scar, that can, you know, just, you know, again, affect, you know, just where the scar is, it can affect a lot of functioning of the abdomen because of the fascial restrictions in the abdomen because of that scar tissue. And then if you have a concept of acupuncture, you can see how that could really block energy flow in the body. And then, you know, for a lot of women, not all, but some, you know, C-section might have come out of the surprised. There's a lot of feelings or emotions that might come up with it. It could have been an emergency and a very traumatic event. And so what we see sometimes, again, and again, and every, like, the body's wise, it's going to do what it feels of the right order and with the right set of circumstances, right? So, you know, often when we inject a scar and then patients open and ready, they can have a very pretty powerful, you know, emotional release as we are, you know, on the table. And so we, of course, create a supportive environment, but it's a very, like, non-verbal, you know, experience. So it could be crying, it could be shaking, it could be, you know, all sorts of things. And then there's a deep relaxation that enters the body after such an experience. And kind of how I make sense of it is that when we are, you know, releasing these traumatic memories that we weren't even conscious of, that also, you know, removes the blockages. So then the body can self-regulate and heal, right, better. And so, and then to that point too, that I've kind of alluded to, one of the things that, you know, Dr. Klinghart taught me is that this relationship between toxicity and trauma. So when we have a body that has stored trauma, we also have a body that has stored toxicity. And he can probably go into that in a little bit more depth in his talk, but what we see is, again, and we can over, like, keep it real simple too. If we're opening up lymph drainage and blood flow and circulation and, you know, helping everything communicate better, then the body can detox better, right? And so then we're opening up the channels to mobilize and, you know, mobilize heavy metals or, you know, pesticides or some of the things that we often are treating our patients for that are affecting their nervous system. So what this experience will look like, often after I do scar therapy, I will give a patient, you know, some binders, right, just to, you know, help ease some of that, you know, after effect. But what we see, especially after I've been working with someone for a while, we get to a point where we're getting a lot of momentum, and then we'll hit a plateau, right? And that plateau can be a lot of things, right? Maybe I have them on the wrong treatment, or maybe they're not ready, or maybe whatever. But a lot of times we look at it in the lens of, you know, could there be, you know, a trauma that needs to be healed in order for their body to really kind of do this next stage of letting go, right? And so once we, and I've seen that time and time again, that once people have these releases or aha moments or these kind of shifts in their mental, emotional, energy, spiritual bodies, that their body can release and let go. And that can look at, like, weight loss or detoxification. But yeah, that's just kind of a common, you know, a common experience that we see in the office.
That's so interesting, because it's also, since I started doing a lot of sound therapy and biofield tuning therapy, like, there's nothing like sound therapy to trigger heavy metal detox. Like, oh, I'm calling it sonic detox. Like, I don't think this could be reached with colonics, with anything else. I think this is, I mean, it's not even cellular. It's like quantum sonic detox, you know? And I just, it's the biggest, like, if you want to get heavy metals going, or the caution is, yeah, make sure you're working with a practitioner who knows how to, you know, properly deal with heavy metals if you're doing sound therapy. But just to draw out as well, how do you heal scars tissue? What are you doing to actually heal scar tissue?
And I love that you've created a whole system, sonic, the quantum sonic detox.
I made that up.
You sign me up, right? But no, I'm sure you're seeing a lot of movement, you know, with that. With scar therapy, I'm trained in neurotherapy, which is an injection technique. So we use a substance called procaine. We get it compounded. It's 1% preservative free, and it has the property to help really break down the scar our tissue and restore lymph drainage and circulation and blood flow, and helps with probably the exclusion zone water and, you know, the scar as well. So we use an injection technique. However, if you don't have a neural therapy practitioner locally, there's a lot of other, you know, modalities. I know acupuncturists, some of them can thread the scar or do needling on the scar. There's also microneedling that can be helpful. There's different creams that you can use topically. We created a flow cream that we have people use on scars, but there's also in traditional neural therapy, they use like wheat germ oil or shea butter to massage the scar. Also light, you know, so light, you know, can be another way to treat the scar. So sometimes if someone's afraid of needles or, you know, it just, you know, it's a child, we'll use basically either red or green light to help help breaking down, essentially help to do the same thing, but just with light. So light can actually, you know, penetrate into the scar and help to restore flow in that area. And so, those are some of the things, you know, we can do neural therapy with needles. I find, of course, I'm partial, you know, neural therapy with needles is really like powerful and it just gets things really moving. But, you know, some people just really do well with a gentler approach as well, even if you don't have access, you know, to this. So, but you can use topicals, you can use light, you can use other needling techniques as well.
Lovely. That's great. It's really amazing for just thinking about the psychology community, sort of learning that, yeah, maybe that this kind of real body work causes an emotional release. Like you do, you know, years of psychotherapy and never get to this because talk therapy won't, you can't talk yourself out of a blocked emotion stuck in scar tissue. Right?
Well said. Thank you. Well said. I know. And, you know, talk therapy has its place, right? But it does. Absolutely. It's like these shifts that we want for our patients, right? The, you know, why they come to see us, right, is to allow their body to have these really, you know, wonderful releases. And, you know, I know sometimes, you know, my patients are kind of like overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, that just happened, you know? And I'm like, no, that was like, I want that to happen for every patient, you know, like you know, your body was ready, willing and able to do that. So that's awesome.
Mm. Oops. Cool. So tell me, what are some of your other tools as well?
Yeah. So, you know, when we think about it, so scar therapy, we do a lot of tapping in the office. So tapping, I'm sure, you know, right. You're talking about. So tapping is just like another way to kind of hook up the unconscious with the conscious mind and to create more flow in the energy system in the body. And tapping is a wonderful tool. I think it's really an empowering tool too. So people can, you know, do that at home. They don't have to always work with a practitioner. So tapping is something that's wonderful. I've mentioned a couple of different forms of body work. So we do craniosacral therapy as well as trigger therapy. And these craniosacral and trigger are different, but they're, you know, basically different things to accomplish the same thing. Again, craniosacral is working more with the cerebral spinal fluid in the body and kind of the cranial rhythm. And you know, working with kind of the movements of the cranial bones and, you know, things can become stuck and, you know, basically disharmonic patterns when there's trauma in the body. And so a craniosacral therapist will invite kind of more of a normal rhythm and flow. And that's a lot of times, you know, people can have these emotional experiences with craniosacral therapy. And then trigger therapy is a really unique therapy. One of the massage therapists that I've worked with over the years introduced us to this, and she, you know, they call it psychosocial integration. So it's like this deep, they use a lot more, it's not like a massage, but it's almost like they use kind of these wave-like kind of hand movements to work with the fascia and the connective tissue. And it's this really, you know, deep fascial unwinding that can also help the body to release, you know, trauma and to also reintegrate after that release. And so, you know, those are the, you know, more the hands-on physical modalities that we use in the office. And then, you know, Dr. Klingern, I'm sure, might talk also about family constellation therapy. So that's another way to, you know, clean up, you know, our epigenetics, right? So this is the whole premise of essentially that unresolved trauma can be stored or passed down rather to generations. So, you know, if you had a grandfather in World War II, or, you know, if a great grandmother, you know, had a, you know, a stillborn, or, you know, some of these, like, you know, life events that we don't think are affecting us, daily, can be impacting us. And I see this, clinically a lot, that again, that plateau happens, or we're, at that certain point, or, where we'll see people still keep repeating certain patterns, and they might have done a lot of self-reflection on their own self-limiting beliefs and their own trauma and their own subconscious, and then they're still stuck. And so that's also the opportunity, to look like maybe there's an energy or a trauma that's not yours, but you're carrying that from your ancestry, and that's affecting your not only emotional well-being, but also your physical health. So we see that a lot. I don't know if you're talking more about constellations, but that can be a really powerful, work that people do. And you can work in a group, or you can work one-on-one. Bert Hellinger is who taught Dr. Klinghardt this work, and he developed kind of this system. And there's a lot of, it's interesting, like this is one system, but a lot of traditional indigenous cultures have some methodology for this work. And so, but constellation work is usually working with, a group and a facilitator to help kind of tap into that trauma and to give peace and resolution to the person that they're doing the constellation for. And then you can do that in a one-on-one setting as well. So, but
It's
that's, yeah, that's, it's really fun work.
it is. I've seen amazing things with constellations therapy, and the amazing things I've seen is people where the person, say it's a mother, maybe does the work in a group setting, and then it's like like her son will have a release who's not even present. Or I've had it where like maybe it's a daughter doing work in the constellation therapy, and then the father like phones them out of the blue, may not have spoken for 5 years, but somehow, I mean, that's incredible. You have to see it to believe it, but we are connected at the, I know it's a sort of, it's woo for people to accept. You just have to, that's what I've seen happen in constellations therapy. It's really amazing.
I feel like that is absolutely true in the for people who are listening, like really have a personal experience before you make an opinion, because it is just something that you have to really experience to get the full impact. And I hear you. I see that those types of things happen a lot. And when we think about, okay, what's happening, we're like kind of healing the field of the family, the energy field of the family, or the summation of the biofields of the family, right? And so that's why there can be these synchronicities, or these really unique and curious experiences that happen out of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you've covered quite a few different levels that you address things. I mean, obviously, and the interesting thing is, I mean, you guys at the clinic, you're working with some of the hardest core difficult situations with Lyme disease, chronic Lyme, which is, like one of some of the very hard on people, it can be, that can last for years and so on. And trauma, the trauma work is fundamental to that. But do you also find, out of interest, that sometimes when you do the physical work, like maybe somebody needs to have then just their basic nutrient levels improved, and they need the gut sorting and all that stuff out. That's obviously, it can help with the psychology, right?
Absolutely. And I think, again, we have to treat everybody individually, but there's a lot of times where the also people's physical bodies need to be stabilized before they can even kind of receive or even get to that level of kind of trauma work, so it's like you don't want to do this before someone's ready. And so I think getting them nutritionally replete, kind of really helping them, with some of the things to really support and balance their body, can allow them to receive. You don't want to like overwhelm or short circuit somebody by doing this work too fast or too quickly. And so I think that's important. And you maybe this is relevant, maybe not, but we do a lot of infection work, right? So we're looking at, different, pathogens and how they can affect the immune system. And our goal is to decrease the burden and then help create more immune resilience. And, one common infection that we often see that's really overlooked, especially with Lyme patients, is parasitic infections. And parasitic infections can be not only worms, but they can be protozoa, they can be amoebas, that kind of thing. And, typically, these are hardy infections that have been, with somebody for a while, right? And so they'll even know, our patients will know, like they're really, more symptomatic around the full moon and, all of these things because of the life cycle of parasites and stuff. And so one of the things that I see a lot is when people move through parasitic treatment, and when they're open and kind of really going through it, there's definitely this not only opportunity for emotional release to happen, but also they You know, parasites have their own consciousness, right? So they have their own kind of physicality, and they can also make it very hard, you know, for a patient to go through treatment. So they're actually creating biotoxins and making the patient feel, you know, very inflamed and very sick going through this process, and can affect them mentally, right? So they can create a whole host of different mental, emotional symptoms. And so why I just touch on this here, it's not necessarily trauma related, but this idea that, you know, it's like there's our true inner who we are, right? And that can sometimes be very confusing when we're going through chronic illness, because these pathogens can actually affect our emotional states. And when we treat those, we can, you know, of course, you know, come back to ourselves. And I see that, you know, not only with infections, but toxicity too. When people are really overburdened and overwhelmed, they, with toxicity, they can feel more anxious, more depressed. And so I swear it seems so simple, but well, when we're going through treatment, we might say, you know, do a coffee enema, do your detox therapies, do, you know, binders, and people get back to themselves and they're like, wow, that was dark and heavy, but I'm on the other side of that. So, you know, healing, I mean, I have so much respect for our patients, because, you know, healing can be, it's work, right? And, you know, you have to, you know, sometimes really go through this roller coaster of experience to get out on the other side. But you know, that's our job too, to support and make sure that they're safe and, you know, supported, and, you know, that we can help them through that.
That was so, that's, thank you so much, Dr. Schiffner. That was really good. It was really comprehensive. And we even touched on the end there, the really important thing about, if you like, bottom up, the fact that, you know, toxins and mold is another one. I've noticed that if someone's got loads of mold toxins, they will their nervous system has gone, it will go crazy, and they will feel like they're probably going psychotic, or that they'll probably get a psychiatric diagnosis. And it's not, it's biological toxicity. So I think that's happening a lot, right? The toxins and so on, and it's causing psychiatric symptoms, but it's not to be dealt with in psychology. It needs a Christine Chapman to do the work to help them.
I'm so happy you said that, in the sense that it's like the mental health part that, you know, I really hope that, you know, as the paradigm is shifting, as we're seeing these illnesses, that our view and our treatment of mental health is definitely, you know, mental health, you know, of course it's complex and we have to look at trauma, but yes, these diagnoses are often a result of infections and toxicity that are affecting the brain and the nervous system and creating these, you know, mental health labels.
Wow, that's great. Thank you so much, Dr. Schaffner. That was awesome. You're amazing. You know, it's a brilliant perspective and framework that you work from in the clinic. I have full respect for what you do there. And yeah, helping a lot of people. So, you know, keep up the good work. Hope you're doing another summit next year. I'll be behind it. I'll support it. And yeah, and encourage people to watch it. I'm a big fan of you and your work and Dr. Klinghart. So thank you so much. And tell people where, you know, any events that you've got coming up, where can people find more out about you and connect with you?
Oh, thank you, Nikki. And no, you're so lovely. And I always love connecting with you. And thank you for putting this work together. So I have a website, drchristineschaffner.com. I have a podcast and, you know, just shares information about where to find me. And then Sophia Health Institute is where I currently see patients. And we have a wonderful team there. And you can find us at sophiahi.com.
Lovely. That's great. Thanks again, Dr. Christine. It was so good. And also, thank you, everybody listening. I hope you found that as enjoyable as I did. And take care for now, everybody. We'll see you soon.